we've read about Elijah and his faith as he stands there before the prophets of Baal. We've read about the centurion's faith, sending his servants to Jesus to ask for the healing of another servant. His expression of trust is described by Jesus as the faith that he looks for in all who would follow him. If we go a little bit later on, the Apostle James, writing to the church, says this about faith and about faith-filled prayer. The prayer of a righteous person is powerful and effective. Elijah was a human being, even as we are. He prayed earnestly that it would not rain, and it did not rain. It didn't rain on the land for 3.5 years. Again he prayed, and the heavens gave rain, and the earth produced its crops. And the challenge of James is quite significant, because he sees Elijah as a human being. He says, Elijah was just like you, just like me. So let's look at Elijah's story. James describes Elijah as a righteous person. But hang on a minute, James, I'm not that sort of person. I don't think of myself as particularly holy or godly. Because we've all known people, and we do know people who we recognise as devout and holy and deeply spiritual. Think of some of those folk that you've known or know, who made a deep impact on your life, pointed you to Christ. Maybe those whose lives have a Christ-like attractiveness, who've got that inner peace and joy that seems to exude itself to all around. I mean, we might think of someone like the Archbishop of York, John Centenary, who has that great warmth and joy that fills him as he walks. I mean, we want to be like them. And the Bible has got accounts of spiritual giants, which are recorded as examples for us to follow. Of all the Bible's spiritual giants, Elijah stands head and shoulders above the rest. Elijah, we're brought up on the story in Sunday school. Elijah contesting with the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel. Elijah is held up by the later prophets as an example of faith, and as the one who was expected to be the herald of the coming Messiah. And so John the Baptist is seen by the New Testament writers as Elijah come again. And of course it's Elijah that appears with Moses on the Mount of Transfiguration, there as Jesus is revealed in all his glory. So Elijah, a man of God, living in the 9th century BC, during the reign of King Ahab. It was a time when Israel's worship of God was facing a great struggle. They were struggling with the gods of the land, particularly with the Canaanite fertility religion and culture. And Elijah stands there for God. Now, Elijah's name means, my God is Yahweh. My God is the God of Israel. There's a drought in the land. Now God has brought about the drought, encouraging Elijah to pray for drought. Because it's God who controls the rain. It's not the prophet Baal, the god Baal. During the drought, Elijah stays with the widow at Zarephath, whose cruse of oil and jar of flour never run out. And when her son dies, Elijah is angry with God. But through a miracle that God allows Elijah to perform, the son is brought back to life. Now that episode leads us on to the contest on Mount Carmel. It's a story within a story. There's Ahab searching for Elijah to bring the drought to an end. And there's needing the production of rain, needing the crops to flourish again. But in the middle of the story comes this confrontation with the prophets of Baal. And this confrontation takes the form of a competition. Come on, let's see whose God is real here. God and Baal, who can send the lightning to ignite the sacrifice? And of course, it's Baal who is supposed to be the god of nature. Baal is the god of the lightning and the rain. Elijah has got supreme confidence in God, and he mocks the frenzied dancing and laceration of the prophets of Baal with all its noise. By contrast, Elijah is serene, quiet confidence as he rebuilds the altar to Yahweh. And the fire of the Lord descends and the people express their trust in God. Then God sends the rain and the drought comes to an end. Well, Ahab tells Jezebel, the queen, all that has happened. And what does she do? Well, she just sends a death threat to Elijah. Elijah, now full of fear, runs for his life to Mount Horeb, where he hides in a cave. It's here that Elijah has a private confrontation with God. He complains that he has done everything that you commanded, God. I've done it all. But I'm the only one left. And now the enemy wants to kill me. God says, come to the entrance of the cave, and you will see me pass by, and you will grow in confidence. And so Elijah waits. There's a great wind, but of course God isn't in the wind. And then there's a great fire, and God isn't in the fire. And there's a great earthquake, and God isn't in the earthquake. And then there is just a quiet whisper, and there God meets with Elijah. Full of fear, though, Elijah still complains. He still complains that he's the only servant left alive, and now his life is under threat. And God tells him, look, I am God. I'm God of the nations. I'm in control of the nations. Elijah, you just need to trust. Don't get frightened. Don't be filled with self-pity. For goodness sake, Elijah, there are 7,000 prophets who haven't bowed the knee to Baal. Later, a confident Elijah will actually confront the king over his treatment of Naboth and taking of Naboth's vineyard. So let's go back to Mount Carmel. Let's go back to Elijah and the prophets of Baal. Elijah's got absolute faith in God. And he challenges the people. He says, how much longer will you step between Baal and Yahweh? They reinterpreted the old faith in terms of the land of Canaan. Baal is seen to be far more relevant than Yahweh. Yahweh may be the one who brings the law, but I mean, Baal is the one who gives the crops their fertility. Baal is the god of the sun and the rain and the lightning. The trouble is that today we've also got the tendency to reinterpret the faith in our own terms. So what might be seen as more relevant today than God? I mean, is it the TV pundits? Is it the scientists? Is it our doctors? Well, it certainly isn't our politicians, I suspect. Who do we trust with our lives? Who actually knows best for us? The latest dietitian? Television adverts about that wonderful makeup because you're worth it. Or is it the latest car? Or the latest electronic gadget? But Jesus says, I have come to give you life. Life in all the fullness that God wants you to have. So Elijah organizes a contest between God and Baal. And Elijah makes fun of the prophets of Baal. Shout louder! Maybe he can't hear you. Maybe he's asleep. And then we get the euphemistic one. Maybe he's gone on a journey. In other words, maybe he's in the loo and he can't hear you. And then he calls on God. Calls on God at the time of the evening sacrifice. And the fire falls from heaven. And the sacrifice is completely burnt up. In spite of the fact that three times Elijah has asked them to pour water all over it, still it's burnt. God is the God who answers prayer. The false gods didn't answer. There was silence. The people wanted to know if God was more real than Baal. And so the answer to Elijah's prayer brings glory to God. God actually is the one who hears and answers prayer. When God answers, extraordinary things happen, and the reality of God is demonstrated. Elijah, of course, is claiming the things that were promised and claimed by Baal. Power over the natural world, power over lightning and rain, power over the fertility of the crops. Sight of the miracle, the people worship God. But there's no deep-seated religious reformation. Jezebel underwent no change of heart. It's not the signs and the wonders that we have here. What's important is the faith of Elijah, who stood alone, trusting in God. Now, are we like Elijah? Elijah was a person like us. In his letter to the church, James writes about prayer and spirituality, and he uses the example of Elijah. I'm Elijah, the righteous man of faith. And he says, Elijah is just like you. But is that right, James? Hey, hang on a minute, I'm not an Elijah. But for James, prayer is the truest response to all problems, to serious illness, failures, brokenness in our relationships, seeking a new rector. Faith is what's important. This was the response, of course, of the centurion who sent his servants to Jesus to seek for healing. In each case, the answer is through the prayer of a righteous, faith-filled person, such as the centurion or Elijah. Such prayer is powerful and it's effective. And yet, of course, it doesn't depend on the perfection of character. Elijah is a person just like us. Now, James, you've got that wrong, surely. Elijah is a spiritual giant. He's not like me at all. Well, yes, he did demonstrate the heights of faith and commitment. He was brave and resolute. He did take his stand for God on Mount Carmel. He was selfless in his concern for others as he stayed with the widow at Zarephath. That's true. Yes, but we also see him fall into depths of depression. We see him flee for his life at the merest whiff of danger. And we find him full of self-pity and annoyed with God. Elijah is an ordinary person, like us, but he was also right with God, and his faith was always in God. His prayer has amazing results. The drought begins, the drought ends. The widow's son returns to life. The lightning falls from heaven and burns up the sacrifice on Mount Carmel. Despite his human frailties, despite the fact that he is just like us, Elijah prayed and God heard. When he learns of the death threat against him, an exhausted and frightened Elijah runs away. But even in his despair and his depression, he speaks to God. He complains to God. He's angry with God. And God answers him. And God gives him assurance. James uses the example of Elijah because he prayed. Simple, brief, confident, trusting in God. Confidence and earnestness and reality are not to be confused with getting excited or long drawn out rituals as with the prophets of Baal. Nor is answered prayer the domain of the perfect Christian, who never doubts, who never gets angry, who's never frightened, who is never depressed. No, Elijah, a man of faith whose prayer is heard and answered is just like you and me. James urges us to recognize that all life is to be lived with an immediate reference to God. Praise, pain, physical illness, spiritual disease, or joy and peace. Hence the example of Elijah, who just prayed. This is the faith that Jesus commended in the centurion. So, if we are, as James says, just like Elijah, what do we need to bring to God in the faith that he longs to meet our needs, our anxiety, our fear, our doubt, or our regret? The stories we've read today of Elijah facing overwhelming odds with the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel, or the Gentile centurion fearing for his life, the life of his servant, they're written to encourage us in our faith. Faith in God. Faith in God's promises and purposes. And that faith will never be disappointed. In January 2000, the leaders of the community in Charlotte in North Carolina invited their favourite son, Billy Graham, to come and receive an honour as a guest at a luncheon. Billy Graham initially hesitated to accept their invitation because he had Parkinson's disease and was beginning to lose his memory, his ability to stand up and speak in public. But eventually he agreed, and they all said wonderful things about him and invited him to step up to respond. And he said, "I'm reminded today of Albert Einstein, the great physicist, who's recognized as the greatest scientist of the 20th century. You see, Einstein," said Billy Graham, "was traveling on a train from Princeton. And the conductor came down the aisle punching the tickets of each of the passengers on the train. He came to Dr. Einstein, who went to find his ticket in his pocket, but it wasn't there, and he looked in his inside pocket, and it wasn't there. Looked in his jacket pocket and his trouser pocket, and then he looked on the seat beside him, and he couldn't find the ticket anywhere. The conductor said, "Dr. Einstein, I know who you are. In fact, we all know who you are. I'm sure that you bought a ticket. Don't worry about it." Well, the scientist nodded in gratitude, and the conductor went on down the carriage. When he got to the end of the carriage, he looked back, and Dr. Einstein was on the floor on his hands and knees, obviously searching for his ticket. So the conductor rushed back and said, don't worry, Dr. Einstein, I know who you are, there's no problem." Einstein looked back at him and said, "Young man, I know who I am as well. What I don't know is where I'm going." Having said that, Billy Graham continued speaking about his life that was coming to an end. He said, "I want you to remember this," he said. "I not only know who I am, but I also know where I'm going." Our most important faith is in God's promises to us and in his purposes for our lives, now, through death, and for eternity. Thanks be to God.